You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Yo, yo, yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show. You ever thought about how you can change your practice? Well, today I have an amazing mentor on. His name is Dr. Jim McKee. He's been on many times before, and he takes us through a framework that's powerful. It's three questions you have to answer on how patients enter your practice to change it all. Please listen to this. I hope you enjoy it. We'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. Have you ever thought about how patients enter your practice? Well, today I've got one of my favorite mentors of all time. He's a regular guest on the podcast. Now, I'm just telling you, you guys got to listen to this man and how he takes us through this thought process. His name is Dr. Jim McKee. He's been a great mentor of mine for a long time. We're going to help you determine a little bit of what's going on right now and how to create a better future. Jim, thanks for being on, brother. I always appreciate you.
Kirk, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for the invite. Always a blast.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And so, you know, selfishly, I'll just tell you guys, if you're listening to the podcast, I'm getting a lot out of this. I hope you are too, and you will if you listen to this podcast. But Jim's so great. So I jump on and I just do an entire data dump of all the stuff I've heard in the last week that are challenges from dentists. I felt like I was bearing my soul to him. And he's such a great listener. He completely diagnosed all the problems and put them into the form of this podcast. That's a big promise. But like, we're going to go there anyway. And Jim, let's go into the eye of the hurricane. You know, talk about the big picture of how patients enter your practice, and why is it a big question for every dentist to answer?
You know, when I look back, Kirk, over my years in dentistry, it is probably the number one question that gets asked. How do patients enter your practice? Whether they're new patients, whether they're existing patients, because what I've learned is that a practice is never the same as it was yesterday. The practice that I have next week is going to be different than the practice I had this week. The practice I have this summer is going to be different than the practice I have now. So as a result, our challenge is to bring people into that community based upon what they're looking for and how that fits with the practice that we're trying to develop. So I really think probably the most important question in dentistry, both from a management and a clinical perspective, is how do patients enter your practice? So it kind of depends upon when you get out of school who you listen to. And what it really boils down to, easiest thought process, is that you're going to have one of two choices when a patient calls your practice and says, I'd like to come in and see you. And usually that means you can either come and see the dentist first, or you can come in and get your teeth cleaned and see the hygienist first. Now, you can do it either way, and it's not that one way is necessarily better than another for you, but it always depends upon what you're trying to do to build the future of your practice, is what I've kind of thought about. Reality I think that it's tough for a hygienist to be able to see everyone as a new patient, do their health history, get any pertinent imaging they may need, diagnose their problems, explain their problems, clean their teeth, do a case presentation, and then have everything ready to go so when the doctor comes in, they can come in and do the glory sweep and be done. I mean, I think it'd be difficult for most doctors to do that, quite frankly. And as a result, what we see is many times is if a patient comes through first in the hygiene department, they'll get cleanings done, they'll get good hygiene care, but the treatment planning kind of gets pushed off. And honestly, Kirk, really, when you think about it, it probably relates to the fact that I think in general, most of us are intimidated by treatment planning cases. You know, if you go back and you look at our training in school, we were really well trained at how to fix teeth. You know, we can put an MO composite on a lower first molar. We can make sure we've got a good contact. We can make sure the margins are sealed. We can make sure the bite fits. But the problem is when patients present with more than just a simple filling, which today it seems like so many patients are by the time we understand airway, by the time we understand joints, by the time we understand orthodontics. So I think it really depends upon the ability of the dentist, if the hygienist is going to see the patient first, to be able to walk in and then transition to a discussion about treatment plan. Now, some dentists are great at it, and some dentists will do it that day in the hygiene chair. Honestly, that was a skill set I was never good at. So early on, what I started doing was I started seeing new patients before they would go to hygiene. Part of it was, you know, back in the day, we don't see it as much now. I used to see a lot of 5, 6, 7, 8 millimeter pockets. And a lot of times those needed scaling and root planing. So it was an easy discussion with the patient about why it's probably best to figure out what type of problems that you have periodontally before you are set up for a cleaning. But, you know, I think today we can have that same discussion with patients in terms of the other things I spoke about as well, the airway, the joints, the aesthetic, the restorative. I think we've made cleanings kind of the entry point in our practice because it was easy. Hygienists could be doing cleanings. We could be doing something else. But I'm going to throw a question at you. As a dentist who owns a business and owns a practice, what is more important than greeting people who come into your practice?
Yeah.
My belief today is nothing. You know, I look back at the patient base that we've been able to put together over the years. We still have patients who have been coming into us since as long as I've been open. And all of a sudden now, when you start to develop a practice like that, the need for new patients goes down because your practice is able to maintain the patients that they have. You know, it's interesting. We're so busy trying to get people in the front door of the practice. What we forget is people are walking out the back door as fast as they walk in the front door.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is we want to maintain our patient retention, but we want to make that an experience for the patient when they come in the practice that they've never really had anywhere else. So I think really the first discussion point comes down to, as a business owner, are you more comfortable seeing the new patient yourself, or would you like to have a staff member see the new patient? For my practice, I never felt that anyone could tell the story as well as I could.
Right.
So selfishly, I wanted the first crack at the patient.
Yeah.
I wanted to understand what the patient's concerns were, and I wanted to be able to address those in a way that the patient knew that A, I had heard them, and B, we could work towards a process of putting something together that it may not have to be all done at once, because one of the big mistakes I made again is I blew a lot of people out of the water.
Yeah,
I mean, my treatment plans were perfect. If this was a dental school treatment planning class and we had looked at the case, I would have got an A+ on the case. problem is once you get out of dental school, it's more than just an articulator and a set of models on the right. articulator. You know, the old LD Pankey saying there's a person on the end of that tooth really became very clear to me after the first 6 months in practice when I said, I got to change things. This isn't exactly working correctly.
Yeah.
So really, I think the number one question today is how do you bring people into your practice? And as I said, my personal choice would be to bring the patient through the doctor's side so the doctor can have the first opportunity to hear the patient. Now, there's exceptions to every rule. There are some of us, many of us as dentists tend to be more introverted. So if communication isn't as easy, maybe it's better to have a staff person to do it. But it got easier for me once I put a format together. And I think one of our next podcasts, Kurt, will be the exact format of how do we bring new patients through the practice. We'll go ahead and we'll walk through a new patient examination and we'll just go through the entire process. So let's put that on our notes for one of our next ones.
Buddy, you're the best. You are absolutely the best, and we will definitely do that. Now, you're going to see, Jim's going to take us through three elements of this. And the first element is, are they coming in to see doctor or hygiene? And Jim, I'm just going to play devil's advocate because there are a lot of young people listening sure. to this. Jim, I get it, but where I have no time. Where in the world would I do this if it's going to transition to doctor first?
Well, that leads to the second question. Depends on the patient coming into your practice. And really, I've worked with Frank Spear for the last 7 or 8 years, and Frank does a great way of filtering patients. Frank will have his front desk person say, are you more interested in having an emergency type treatment taken care of today? Or would you like us to take a look and see what's going on in the rest of your mouth as well? So it's a real easy way to start to call the question. And if you have someone who says, you know what, I've just got a broken tooth on the lower right, that's all I want fixed. Great. Then we'll have the patient come in. That in our office will be scheduled more of an emergency exam as opposed to a new patient exam. For new patient exams, I want the patient to be able to hear me and to be able to follow a thought process. Difficult to do if a patient has a broken tooth. Difficult to do if a patient has an abscess and they're in pain. So what I want to do is I want to get those preliminary problems under control. I can always take a look at the patient who has the broken tooth and say, okay, let's get this fixed first. And then if you'd like, we can talk about some other things. Looks like there's some areas on the upper left that you may want to consider. Maybe there's a tooth on the lower right that we might want to talk about. Let's get what you came in today fixed first, though, and then we can kind of go from there. What I would have done in the earlier years, I would have pressed the patient to be able to go ahead and do the other work because I knew that's what they needed. Problem was, it's not what I know that the patient needs, it's what the patient has to understand what they need. And what happened was a lot of the time the patients who are coming in our practice in the exact scenario that you just described, Kirk, where the doctor's too busy to see that, there's one common assumption made. And the assumption is that the patient wants the lowest cost and the fastest way they can do it. And, you know, that's true for some patients. But in my experience, again, I have really come to believe, and I think we might have talked about this earlier, is that patients ultimately want two things. Patients want answers and patients want options. And we can give them answers. The options part is the little more difficult one. Because in order to give them options, we need to know where their level of awareness is. Some patients want everything fixed to the best possible degree it can be. Other patients may say, you know what? I don't really care that much. Just fix the tooth that hurts. Yeah. And that's okay. Either one of those are okay. Because the second group, the patients had said, I just want what's hurting fixed. if I can meet them at that level and work with them, I can't tell you how many of those patients over time came around and said, you know what? Let's talk about some of those other things too.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Dawson made a great comment that always resonates in my head when I'm talking to patients. The average intelligent patient wants a healthy mouth. And they're going to do what they need to do to get a healthy mouth as long as two things occur. They understand the problem and your solution makes sense. I mean, and I think when Pete said that so eloquently, it really cuts through a lot of the stuff that we hear, because the insurance company clouds the discussion, scheduling clouds the discussion. Bottom line, people want a healthy mouth.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be coming to us if they didn't. So if we can figure out a way to meet them where they are and not overwhelm them like I did, then you can start to develop that trust over time. And with some patients, that trust can be developed in one appointment. In other patients, it might take a year or two in the practice. And depending upon how busy you are, that's how much time you're going to be able to spend in that part of the practice.
Right.
There was something, you know, another thing we should do is we should do the above and below the line discussion too. I'll make some notes here too.
Yeah.
The above and below the line concept is a concept that Dr. Pankey used in terms of evaluating whether people had a high or low awareness of dentistry. And the number one mistake I made is that I presented advanced dentistry to below the line patients. I presented treatment plans, as I said, that were perfect treatment plans, but I had not prepped the patient to be able to hear that. So what I did is I presented way over their heads. And what's the patient thinking? Patient thinking, this doctor's trying to get in my wallet.
Right.
I got to get out of here and find another dentist that isn't trying to rip me off. But here's the other side of the coin you have to be wary of as a dentist. If, on the other hand, we make the conversation and start at the low end and the patient has a higher awareness, then the patient is like, this isn't going to work. I need a dentist who's more sophisticated to take care of my needs. I just left my last dentist because I didn't feel the attention that I needed with this problem.
Right.
So we had a new patient call the other day and said, are you in any dental networks? And my front desk person, Margaret, said, no, we're not. And she goes, okay, good. Then we can talk. Because I think you're seeing patients who have had an outcome that they maybe weren't hoping for when insurance companies limit what we can do. Because that's what it is. The insurance companies limit what we can do because ultimately they put a ceiling on the fee. And if there's a ceiling on the fee, that means there's a ceiling on the time. So if you don't have a very complex case, it doesn't really matter. Because all you need is a cleaning anyway, no big deal. But if you have a more complex case, those are the patients that have a difficult time getting good treatment plans for their problem. Because many times, as you mentioned, there isn't the time available to devote the diagnostic expertise or the diagnostic information that has to be gathered in order to give those patients with more complex needs a realistic treatment plan.
Yeah.
So I think a lot depends upon how patients enter your practice. I remember a saying at the Pankey Institute a long time ago, whatever type of practice you have today, it's going to be the same practice in 10 years, only bigger. When I look back on that, and we will talk about it a whole above and below the line podcast, because I think it's really valuable information that I didn't get in dental school. Most dentists don't look at their preferred patient base.
Right.
That's what we need to really be moving towards creating is a preferred patient base. It's no different than you when you're looking for dentists who are looking for consulting services.
Right.
You're looking for someone who's got a sophisticated practice who can use your services.
Right.
That's why I think today building the preferred patient base in our practice is probably, from a business owner's perspective, one of the key things that we have to be thinking about, not only ourselves, But we have to train our staff members as well to be thinking about that, because ultimately that's where the practice is going to be moving towards in the future.
Yeah, I'm loving this. Jim, we already have three podcasts that we're going to film in conjunction with this. And if you guys are listening and following along and taking notes, which I hope you are, you know, the first part of this that Jim's walking us through is, how do you structure the practice? Are they coming in to see hygiene or doctor? And then the second piece is, are they coming in for emergency or comprehensive exam? Now, I have like five questions to ask you on number two. Sure. And I'll limit them to my favorite, because what we're really talking about for a dentist that's listening is, this is counterintuitive. Wait a minute. You're asking me to slow down and somehow this is going to get better, which is true. And then can you speak to this? The more, because one of the challenges is you have emergencies everywhere. You might be a dentist listening. You're like, I got broken teeth everywhere. Is it true from your experience, the more comprehensive you move, the less emergencies you have? Is that true?
What you end up being able to do is you'd be able to put out fires earlier.
Okay.
That's really what it comes down to. Again, looking back at the early years in practice, before I was able to treatment plan real well and to build value with patients real well, I had a lot of patients who would float around in the practice, and I'd hear from them every 6 months, 9 months, a year. They'd have an abscess. They'd have a broken tooth. They didn't really follow through on a comprehensive treatment plan. As my practice started to change, it's funny, my pager, this is back in the old days when you had pagers, my pager didn't go off as much as it used to. So what you started to see is a decrease in having to go in, because a lot of those patients, you're able to start moving those into a phased treatment plan. Now, I don't want to talk pie in the sky and have this not be a realistic discussion either.
Right.
Because you have to know right off the bat, just because you start talking to patients differently doesn't mean that they're going to say yes automatically to huge treatment plans. But I think if you phase treatment plans and you go at a pace that's realistic for the patient, then I think you can really change your practice. You know, the pace part is the part that we make assumptions on. Because, you know, the crazy thing is, Kirk, when patients say no to us, why do we think they said no?
Because it was too expensive.
It's too expensive. And you know what? In my experience, that's usually not the reason why. It's either it's not a good time for them in their life. There might be some fear considerations. They might not understand the problem. They might not understand the solution, or they might not have figured out that you're the dentist for their treatment yet. So don't automatically jump to the money thing, because that's what we're insecure about. So that's why we feel they say no. There's a lot of reasons why people don't accept our treatment plans. That would be another good one, too. Why don't patients accept our treatment plans?
I'm going to keep you very busy for the next couple months. Really.
But don't always make it about money.
Right.
Because that's not the case.
Right. Now, going through this, another thing you have to do is you got to get your team to understand the why. These three questions, and we're not even to number three, but these are things as a leader, you got to help your team understand. You know, are they going to be, how we're going to switch this? They're now going to be seeing the doctor. How do we communicate on the phone between the emergency and the comprehensive exam, which ultimately leads us to number three. Take us through the third question you have to answer when it comes to patients coming in your practice.
You know, when I was putting this together for today, I wanted to save this question for the last question, because I really think it's the most important question. And the real question is, what type of practice are you trying to build? If we're trying to build an insurance-based practice, then it really doesn't matter. Bring people in anyway. Now, you have to know that in an insurance-based practice, people will come and leave your practice on a regular basis. If their insurance changes, that means generally there's a good chance they will change as well. That's okay. And a lot of dentists prefer that style of practice. But honestly, I don't see a lot of dentists enjoying that practice over a longer period of time. might be easy in the beginning because you get a bunch of patients in, you're able to get your skills up, you're able to pay down some student loans. But, you know, it's interesting. We see dentists coming out of school today, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 in debt sometimes. Staggering when you think about it. So the conversation that we're having might not apply to you for the first 2, 3, 4 years in your practice, in your professional career, let me put it that way. Because you might be in a practice that is heavily insurance-based, and you need to be in that practice to be able to pay the bills. What I see a lot is a lot of people, we have a study club that we run here, we have a lot of young members in the study club. In my experience, when dentists are out of school, let's call it that kind of that golden mark, that 4 to 6 to 8 years out, that's when I'm seeing dentists who are looking to take over a practice. And usually it's a fee-for-service practice. And usually it's almost the exact quote is, I've done dentistry in large PPO practices, and I know that's not the type of dentistry that I'm looking to do.
Yep.
I've been triple booked. I've been booked with patients who don't follow through with recommendations. So what I'm trying to do is to set up a different style of practice. So while there's a lot of discussion today about PPOs, be interesting to see how many people 5, 10 years out of school are still in a PPO practice. So I think that what you start to see is, yeah, you start to see it coming out of school because the way the finances are set up, you can be guaranteed $150,000, $175,000, $200,000 a year. And if you're vigilant and you keep your personal overhead low, what you could do, just making a note on another one.
I love it.
If you can keep your personal overhead low and shed some debt, it's a nice way to be able to build your hand speed, to be able to build your verbal skills with your patients, and then go out and take over a fee-for-service practice where now you'll have the capability to make these changes.
Yeah, I completely echo your sentiment. And we could talk for a whole hour on the disadvantages of moving towards a PPO practice. But one thing that doesn't get discussed a lot, it's the freedom thing. Most people, and not necessarily just dentists, anyone that ever becomes an entrepreneur, one of the main reasons they ever do that is because they get freedom, freedom of choice, freedom to do what they want, freedom to do it their way. And as you can imagine, when you get heavily involved in PPOs, that freedom goes away. You now can't make a lot of choices. And so that's a tough thing. Ultimately, that just burns in the belly and it creates a deep subjective pain. Sometimes I have the same conversations and some people are just like, I can't do it this way. And yes, the money's important. Yes. And so what you're talking about, Jim, is the freedom of choosing your patients, choosing how you want to care for them, choosing your hours, we spend 30% of our lives at this thing called work. It's got to be a fun place to go to, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. You spend a lot of times you'll see your staff members more than your family members.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that it's a good place to work, not only for you, but for your staff members as well. And I will tell you that without a doubt, if you can move to a fee-for-service practice, it allows your staff to have a more fulfilled experience as well. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. The problem is a lot of times insurance-based practices have a lot of overhead in terms of patients, but they also have a lot of overhead in terms of staff.
Right.
So what you've got is strangers working on strangers. And it's probably the most invasive procedure done without anesthetic, if you think about it.
True.
You know, you're not putting a drill spinning 250,000 times a minute with a diamond impregnated burr into someone's leg if they're not sedated. You're doing that in the dental world, though. You got to be able to manage the personalities of both the patient and the staff. But I always go back, whenever I have a staff issue, my go-to line always is, we do this in our practice because this is in the best interest of the patient.
Yep.
That's always my line, because that's what it is. I mean, I can't think of very many policies that we have in our practice that have resulted from the fact that it wasn't in the best interest for the patient.
Yeah.
All the changes that we have made over the years has been done to make the patient experience better, because the practice I'm trying to build is a relationship-based practice. Insurance companies are a commodity-based practice. Not better or worse, just different. But since it is different, it has to be managed in a different way, and it has to be thought about in a different way as well. So I think today, how you bring your patients into your practice really relates to what type of practice you're trying to build.
Yeah. And Jim, I love this. Now, again, I'll speak to you guys as the listener. You're going to see Jim took us through this process. These are three great questions you have to ask yourself. You know, how do they come in? You are the hygiene department. Are they coming in for emergency comprehensive exam? And then how are you building? And I want you to tie this together, because I said this to you before. I talk about vision all the time. People are like, oh, vision. Here he goes with the whole vision thing. Ultimately, when you answer these questions, you're going back to the beginning, what you said. You're taking this practice and you're making it better tomorrow, better the next day. And you are creating this. You're making this vision come alive, correct?
Right. I mean, you know, it's one patient at a time. You know, sometimes the old joke is, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And it's the same thing with a dental practice. How do you change a practice? One patient at a time, one staff member at a time, one interaction at a time. Yeah. I think today, I think there's an opportunity out there that we're missing. I don't think all patients are locked onto the PPO model. As I told you, the patient who called our practice said, are you in a dental network? And the answer was no. And that was a good thing for the patient. I think that we have been programmed, quite frankly, to think that the insurance companies have the patient's best interest at heart, and the patients want the lowest cost for whatever the work is. Obviously, patients don't want to pay any more than they have to, but I think if we can help patients understand, we're going to talk about what's in your best interest, not the insurance company's best interest, not my best interest, but your best interest, then I think we can start to move a practice. Otherwise, we're too busy to do that, and we're just filling holes and fixing teeth. And if I'm a patient, I'm going to say, okay, that was okay, but it didn't wow me. I'm not going to call my sister and say, you need to go see this dentist. They did a great job at the office today. So I think big picture wise, ultimately what it comes down to, and we've talked about this before, who are you the answer for? Who are you the answer for? Are you the answer for the person seeking the least expensive dentistry in town? No, because there's a lot of answers for that. I want to be the answer for the patient who's looking for comprehensive care, who can keep their teeth, and is willing to have discussions about that.
Yeah. This is why he is such a great mentor for me and so many. And Jim, do you have any last thoughts? Because you said that really well, but I don't know if you want to put a final bow on this.
Well, you know, here's the thing. We kind of forget about this because we get so locked into dentistry. Just pretend you're the patient. That's the easiest thing to go back to. If I'm the patient, what do I want? I want to be seen in an office that has pleasant people. I want to be seen in an office that's clean. I want to be seen in an office that has an expert diagnostician. And I want to be seen in an office that's going to listen to me. And if I can do that, if you can think about what you want as the patient and let that drive your thought process, I think the whole thing about managing a practice becomes a lot easier than we make it out to be.
Yeah.
That would be what I would say.
Buddy, so well said. And the way it goes now, we have 5 follow-up podcasts for this one. So, Jim, I want people to find out, you know, I know if you're listening for the first time, you've never heard Jim, I'm just going to encourage you to follow Jim, whether it be at Spear Education, whether in his study club, if he's speaking anywhere, go. Heck, if you get a chance to run into him, it's the Chicago meetings, the Equilibration meeting, whatever. I want you to check it out. And I want people, Jim, where do I find out more of what you do? How do I find out more about what you do?
Well, actually, I teach a 3-day course at Spear Education. It's the Advanced Occlusion Workshop. It's an awesome 3-day workshop. Really what it does, it goes into occlusion and joint diagnosis from a restorative perspective. So it's not really a TMD course. It's mainly an occlusion restorative treatment planning course. That's an awesome 3-day course. We're doing one at the end of February, and we're doing one at the end of July this year in Scottsdale. Chicago Study Club is a study club that I started with Seth Atkins, Drew McDonald, and Kurt Ringhofer. Seth and Kurt are both restorative dentists who are top 9 restorative dentists. Drew McDonald's an orthodontist who's fabulous and really understands orthodontics today from an occlusion perspective. That's an invitation-only study club. If you'd like more information, you can email me at jim@mckeedds.com. I always throw an open invitation, too. I love having people come to the office. You want to come and hang out at the offices for a day? You come hang out at the office for a day. That'd be a blast. It's always fun to have new people in the office, and I'm sure you'll see some interesting cases. So those are the things I'd say.
Okay, that is awesome. And if you're listening right now, do it. Just do yourself a favor, because you'll pick up so much. Now, I'm going to share a story with you, Jim. Bob Margis came on here, said the exact same thing. That podcast was downloaded thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Guess how many people showed up to his office?
How many?
One.
Yeah.
One person showed up. And this is a golden opportunity just to see it. Because you learn on so many levels. You learn by seeing, experiencing, you know. Sure. You pick up so much. So, Jim, that's an awesome invitation. Heck, I might come myself.
Anytime. I love it.
Buddy, you're the best. I know I can't keep you all day. I have so many questions, but we're going to do some follow-ups here. I'm going to put a link to everything that Jim has shared, including his email address. If you're interested in going to a study club, I'm going to tell you to reach out to him, because it's a special group of people, and check out everything that he's doing. So, Jim, thank you again, brother. I really appreciate you.
Always a blast, Kirk. Look forward to the next one.
Oh, absolutely. And stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. I'm telling you, this guy's amazing. You also find other mentors in your life. You got to hold on to them, because they teach you so much stuff and save you so much time, and they improve your thinking. So if you enjoyed today, do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends. I'm going to have Jim back again and again and again. We're going to cover a lot of different stuff. And until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching, keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5-star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it, so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.